At the speeds the vessel was now capable of, her hull had to be stiffened and reinforced. Stabilizing fins were added, and her bow modified to give her modest ice-breaking abilities. Several hundred miles of wiring were run throughout the ship for her sophisticated suite of electronics, everything from military-grade radar and sonar to dozens of closed-circuit television cameras. Keeping tabs on the system was a Sun Microsystems supercomputer. Then came the weapons. Two torpedo tubes, a 120mm cannon that used the targeting system from an M1A1 Abrams main battle tank. She sported three General Electric 20mm Gatling guns, vertical launchers for surface-to-surface anti-ship missiles, and a slew of 30-caliber machine guns for self-defense. All the weapons were cleverly hidden behind retractable hull plates, like the German K-boats used during World War I. The 30 cals were tucked inside rusted oil barrels permanently affixed to the deck. With a flick of a button in the operations center, the barrels' lids would pop open and the weapons would emerge, fired remotely by gunners safely inside the ship. Cabrillo added other surprises, too. Her aftmost hold was converted into a hangar for a 4-passenger Robinson R-44 helicopter that could be hydraulically raised to the deck. Concealed doors where she could unleash all manner of small craft, including Zodiacs and a SEAL assault boat, were at her waterline, while, along her keel, two massive panels opened into a cavernous space called a moon pool, where a pair of mini-subs could be launched covertly. As for the crew's accommodations, no expense was spared. The passageways and cabins were as luxurious as any 5-star hotel. The Oregon boasted probably the finest kitchen afloat, with a staff of Cordon Bleu-trained chefs. One of the ballast tanks along her flanks, designed to make the vessel appear fully loaded should the need arise, was lined with Carrara marble tiles and doubled as an Olympic-length swimming pool. The money to start the corporation and pay for the conversion of the Oregon had come from a hidden Cayman Islands bank account that had once belonged to an assassin-for-hire Cabrillo had taken care of for his former employer, the Central Intelligence Agency. Technically, the money should have reverted to the CIA's black budget, but Juan was given tacit approval to fund his enterprise by his immediate superior, Langston Overholt IV. Cabrillo had been contemplating leaving the CIA for a short while when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait on August 2, 1990, and caught everyone at Langley completely unaware. Central Intelligence had fought the Cold War for so long that when the Berlin Wall came down and the Soviet Union imploded, they weren't ready for the regional flare-ups that Juan had known would follow. The agency's corporate culture was too entrenched to see the looming danger. When Pakistan tested its first nuclear bomb, the CIA learned about it from news broadcasts. Cabrillo felt the CIA's inflexibility was blinding them to how the world was reshaping itself after so many years of being dominated by two superpowers. Overholt never formally gave Juan permission to fund his own covert paramilitary company, the Corporation, but he too had understood that the rules were changing. Technically, Cabrillo and his crew were mercenaries, but while the money to fund their operation could never be traced back to the United States, Juan never forgot who allowed him to get his start. So it was on Overholt's behalf that the Oregon was sitting a couple of miles off Iran's coast, pretending to be something she was not. Cabrillo and Hanley made their way to a conference room deep inside the ship. The meeting that Juan had been chairing when secondary radar had picked up the approaching patrol boat and prompted him to play Ernesto Esteban was still going on. Eddie Sung was standing in front of a flat-panel television with a laser pointer in hand. Far from the hapless plumber he'd portrayed for the Iranians, Sung was a CIA veteran like Cabrillo. Because of his uncanny ability to meticulously plan and carry out missions, Eddie was the corporation's director of shore operations. No detail was too small not to demand his full attention. It was his intense concentration that allowed him to spend much of his career under deep cover in China, eluding perhaps the most ruthless secret police in the world. Seated around the large conference table was the rest of the corporation's senior staff, with the exception of Dr. Julia Huxley. Julia was the Oregon's chief medical officer, and she rarely attended mission briefings unless she was going ashore.
"So did you chase away the Iranian Navy with your breath?"
Linda Ross asked Juan when he sat next to her.
"Oh, sorry."
Cabrillo fished in his pockets for a mint to mask the smell of the Limburger cheese he'd eaten just before the sailors came aboard.
"I think it was my bad English,"
he said in the horrible stereotyped accent he'd used.